The message from both of us and why we are focused on creating jobs and fighting climate change and creating growth together, the message that we can do things and we will be doing things together.
The Prime Minister there this morning commenting on what he wants to, or what message he wants to deliver when he meets with U.S. President Joe Biden, who touches down here in the country's capital city in just over 24 hours at around 6:30, I believe, Eastern tomorrow night. He's here for just over 24 hours, doing a lot in that time, including meeting with the Prime Minister, meeting with Cabinet more largely, and addressing Parliament. What can the feds get out of this visit, get out of this meeting? Let's bring in the Daily Debrief panel to talk about that.
The Daily Debrief.
With me this afternoon, Michelle Cadario, CEO of Vanguard Strategy Incorporated and former Deputy Chief of Staff to Prime Minister Paul Martin and BC Premier Christy Clark. Corey Tenike, former Director of Communications to Prime Minister Stephen Harper, now co-founder and CEO of Rubicon Strategy. And Kathleen Monk, the principal owner of Monk & Associates. Hi, everybody. Nice to have you here this afternoon. Corey, I'm going to start with you. Do you think the feds walk away with something like a concrete win? I know there's all these different priorities, the economy, security, a whole bunch of other stuff on the table. Is there something they're going to walk away with to be able to say, like, hey, this happened?
Well, I feel like if there's one thing that they'll probably be able to get done, it's something around critical minerals and a deal around access to those. I think a lot of the other things that are being looked for by each party are really a reach. If you're thinking about having Canada lead a mission in Haiti, very unlikely that we'll agree to that. I think they'll be looking for more spending on NORAD. You know, that's another area where I think there could be some agreement and something does happen. But I don't think we're going to see a new safe third country agreement or anything like that. So. Or an end to Buy American policy. So I think it's going to be empty-handed for both parties on a bunch of things. But if there are two, those would be critical minerals and NORAD.
I mean, the government, especially around critical minerals, Michelle, has sort of set the stage for something to be productive in that area. I mean, it seems like it's the place where both countries are naturally aligned. We have it. They want it. It can fit into their sort of new industrial policy. Do you anticipate that ends up being sort of one of the more successful areas of the visit?
Yeah, I think so. You know, like each side will come in with a set of issues that they want to discuss. And there's so many, you know, we have so much in common. And this is one area where we can see progress. It's a key resource, obviously. And there doesn't seem to be any misalignment between the countries. As Corey said, so many of the other issues are almost intractable, right? And it'll take an enormous amount of time and to be able to figure them out. It's important that they get raised and that each side kind of makes their issues known. But most important for Canada and for the government, I think, is they want to come out of this being seen as a strong ally, a strong partner, both in terms of security of North America, but also in terms of keeping the economy going. And, you know, the minerals announcement would be something to point to as a term of success.
Both Michelle and Corey, Kathleen, referred to, I think Michelle was referring to the Safe Third Country Agreement as one of the more intractable parts of what they'll be discussing. I did find it interesting that Kirsten Hillman, the Canada's ambassador to the U.S., is kind of signaling, well, don't think for sure the U.S. is immovable on that, but they've really given us no indication so far that they're going to make some changes. But I mean, things happen, things change, but I haven't seen any clear indications of that. What do you think?
Yeah, I certainly a few weeks ago said on this show that I don't think that is going to be dealt with in this meeting, but perhaps if Canada is willing to take up the Haiti mission, if there's some kind of quid pro quo there, you know, Canada does have good numbers in terms of its immigration, but we're still not pulling our weight in terms of the overall refugee and international displacement crisis. So maybe they could use that as a bit of a flex with Biden. I'm not sure. I think back to your original question of what the feds get out of this visit. I mean, they get a good news story. You know, they get the glow of the U.S. presidency, you know, on home turf, you know, and that's important for the Liberals right now. They've been on the ropes for a few weeks with this election interference scandal. And I think that this will help them in many ways turn the page. But it's really important that they don't just play political defense all the time in this visit, that they don't just, you know, get stuck, you know, defending the fact that we are not really pulling our weight on spending on defense, or that we haven't done enough on, you know, China. And so getting a win, like Michelle and Corey mentioned, around critical minerals would be significant for the Liberals and for our economy.
Let me ask you, Corey, how the opposition navigates a trip like this, because I think Kathleen's right that, like, the headlines have not been friendly to the Liberals over the last really now month. This will, for a few days, kind of take up the oxygen. How do you approach it as how should the federal Tories approach it?
Well, you want to set the bar for the government in terms of outcomes of the meeting at a level that they're not going to be able to jump over. And I think there's a number of areas, like we went through a number of them, where there are big gaps. Like, you know, we're in a world that's at war right now. And, you know, we haven't had a war in Europe in a very long time. Not since the conflict in Kosovo. So, you know, military spending and meeting our obligations under our NATO alliance are going to be front and center. And I don't think the Liberals are prepared to spend the amount of money that the United States expects, which is, I think, 2% of GDP. So I think that's one area. I don't think they're going to make it on the Roxham Road Safe Third Party Agreement. So I think I want to have that there. And I'd want to talk about China. Because I think that is the subtext of the critical minerals piece as well. But you know, we have shared security concerns, whether it's spy balloons or whether it's hacking and or political interference.
Do you think that Canadians underestimate the degree, Michelle, to which the U.S. wants to talk about security? I had Vincent Rigby, the former national security advisor to Prime Minister Trudeau, on the program. He wrote an op-ed in the Globe saying, like, that should be your top of the agenda. You should be trying to reassure them that we take this seriously. And the U.S. ambassador was on my program over the weekend. Like, that's all he wanted to talk about. Do you think we underestimate a little bit the degree to which that's a priority for them?
I think generally we do, but I would say that it's more top of mind probably for Canadians now than it's ever been.
Right.
You know, these balloons floating over our continent and having, you know, our jets and U.S. jets kind of having to go up and take them down, that's unprecedented. Not to mention, as Corey said, we have a war, like a ground war going on in Europe. And so I think that people are thinking about these things more so than they have before. I think it's certainly of concern that you know, the headlines haven't been that friendly, and there's a, you know, there's a subtext of national security to all of that election interference, which again I think is really important that the Liberals are now as a government, you've got to put a lid on that, and you've got to have concrete steps going forward, and you want, you know, President Biden ideally to be talking from the podium right beside Prime Minister Trudeau, saying what a strong ally that they are and fierce defenders of North America and glad to be arm in arm with them. Like, that external validation is hugely important.
Kathleen, I have about a minute left. Last word to you.
Yeah, I just say on the issue of defense spending, I mean, this is not a new story. It's over 20 years old. We can all remember John Manley when he was defense minister says, you know, Canada continually kind of gets up and leaves the table at the restaurant and fails to pick up the check when it comes to defense. And it's time for us to kind of, you know, put the money on the table. And that story was 20 years ago. And so it's not surprising that the U.S., you know, continually is kind of like tapping its fingers going, you know, same old story from Canada again. So I think, you know, it's true that we need to do more on the North. We need to do more on NORAD. And potentially we need to do more than we're already doing internationally, whether it's Ukraine or Haiti.
Okay, I'm going to leave it there. We are going to pick up the conversation with the Daily Debrief panel on the other end of a quick commercial break. Next up, we'll turn to that subtext that you heard our panelists refer to in China, and specifically the allegations of foreign interference. There's a mandate and a deadline now for former Governor General David Johnston. The panel will weigh in on that next. Stay with us.
He's named his neighbor, family friend, ski buddy, and member of the Beijing Finance Trudeau Foundation to look into the matter, which is nothing more than a delay.
We named David Johnston as the independent expert to identify any gaps in our system. He will make public recommendations, which could include a formal inquiry or some other independent review process, and we will abide by those recommendations.
The Conservative Party blocking our motion to have a vote in this House on a public inquiry. So my question to the Conservative leader, why is he playing games? What does he have to hide? Why won't he stand up?
Just another drama-free day in the House of Commons around the issue of foreign elections interference. You heard there from the leader of the Tories, the leader of the NDP, and of course the Prime Minister. Yesterday, he announced that the mandate, rather, for former Governor General David Johnston, as well as a deadline for determining whether an inquiry should happen, and the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff agreed to appear before a committee after about 24 hours of the Liberals on that committee trying to prevent that really from happening. So let's unpack where this all goes from here. The Daily Debrief panel is back to talk about that. Michelle Cadario, Corey Tonight, and Kathleen Monk. Michelle, I want to start with you. I feel like the Liberals are announcing a lot of stuff that makes sense, except for the fact that it feels like they are so incrementally doing so and then also like kind of pushed into doing so versus, you know, coming out with this kind of stuff early on, that like any potential win or positive impact for them is somewhat mitigated because of that. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, certainly for all of us who pay a lot of close attention to what's going on in Ottawa, it seemed ham-fisted and it seemed to take forever for them to come out with a good conclusion and a good process to be able to handle this issue. For most Canadians, though, they're not paying attention, and they're certainly not paying attention to a bunch of to any kind of staffer who's going to a committee that they've never heard of. You know, so they're not really worried, and nobody's going to be thinking about this, in my opinion, come the next election. But now we have a process, finally. I think it's a solid process. I think it's a extremely quick process, and in government time, it's almost at warp speed in terms of what you know, Mr. Johnston's going to have to be reporting on. It seems that there's no kind of limits to what he can look into. And so if they wanted to come out and say that they were allowing for an incredibly transparent process, I think that they've achieved that. Now we'll see what comes about.
I'm so interested in the discussion that often like subjects like this, you know, do real people besides us or people who are involved in Ottawa actually care? Is this making a difference to them? Are they going to vote on the issue? I certainly understand the point that like, you know, people are way more worried about how much lettuce costs and how much life costs right now, Corey. At the same time, there are like little things I think that chip away at the perception people hold of their political leaders. And this has happened in various parties in various instances. So I don't think it's like you can dismiss the impact completely. But I do take the point that like this, you know, it's not the foremost concern on everyone's mind right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's as I say, not, it's another brick in the wall, another pebble in the backpack, whatever analogy you want to use. These are the things that accumulate over time for governments. I think if you're the government, you want to see the time for a change, right track, wrong direction, numbers start tilting back in their favor if they want to be reelected. And this is certainly not moving it in that direction. So, you know, it's bad news. I think it reveals, I guess, a bit of sloppiness in terms of issues management on the part of the government. And you got to be concerned about that. This is one of several issues that I think they've been a bit ham-fisted in handling. I think at a certain point you run out of runway. They really have to get onto a narrative that is more conducive to their reelection if they want to be reelected.
And what would that narrative be, Kathleen?
What narrative for they to be reelected?
Like, what would they rather be talking about?
Oh, well, that's exactly the point that I would want to make today. First of all, just back to your original question on normal people and not caring about this issue. I do not like going to the gym. So I actually use my gym time every morning to actually do informal surveys of folks at the gym. And no one is talking about this issue. That said, it kind of gets me out of having to use the machine. So I'm prepared to continue to do that on behalf of Canadians for the next few weeks.
Very generous of you. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. But I did think what was interesting was how the Liberals because you said it works towards the perception of a party. And what I thought was interesting was yesterday, in their flip-flop of a decision to allow Katie Telford to testify, is how they actually were trying to characterize both their opposition and what they were doing. They were trying to say, you know, and I don't necessarily agree with them, but they're saying the conservatives were doing political stunts and that they were, you know, all this toxicity and not making making political theater. Whereas they, in their answers to why Katie Telford was testifying, is the liberals said they were trying to make Parliament work. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that at all. As my colleagues have pointed out, they've just dragged this out and filibustered it for weeks. But it is interesting to see how they're trying to paint this picture for Canadians as conservatives of being obstructive and as liberals, you know, trying to get things done. That said, I think ultimately Katie Telford's very competent. The liberals trust her to basically, you know, not let committee turn into a circus. She's been pretty cool and calm when she's had to testify in the past. And so I think they're just going to try to get it done. You know, there's a history of chiefs of staff, whether it's Nigel Wright or Jerry Butts testifying to a committees. And I think probably I'd put good money on Katie at surviving committee whenever it happens.
To your point though, Michelle, I mean, it's interesting because even when Jerry Butts testified or Katie testified the last time, I mean, there was a bigger audience than you might expect. I don't know what I know. I can't gauge what it would be in this instance. And especially I think the hard part here is going to be, nobody we've heard question in a public forum has really told us that much. Right. And a lot of it is inhibited by what they're allowed to say because of national security. So you end up with this feeling of like, what did I really get out of this?
Yeah, so just for the record, I am fundamentally opposed to political staff having to testify before committees. They are not the ones that are elected, they are not the ones on the ballot, and they are not the ones that should hold that responsibility. But having that said, that precedent has been broken and it's going ahead. Now, you know, especially on an issue like this, you know, Katie is extremely competent and she's going to handle herself very well. But I would suspect that it's very limited in terms of what she can say. And so it's going to be probably a little bit of a frustrating experience around the committee table. And, you know, the opposition are likely going to try and make that seem that she's being obstructionist or that she's trying to stop the work of the committee and and not cooperating as she should. But it's going to be really hard to even see what path she can really go down. This is all public. So everything that we're talking about is she's not going to be sharing the secrets of what our spy agencies, if they know anything about it or have shared with her, because, you know, those who are interfering, like the Chinese, are going to be reading the exact same thing and tuning into the exact same program to see what we know. It's kind of odd that this would be the forum that people would actually want to air any kind of security concerns and secrets.
Corey, last word to you on this. I know the conservatives say what they want is to find out what the prime minister knew and when. Again, I don't know. I mean, how much do you anticipate those questions will be answered? And I'm sure there's a larger political thing that they want too.
Well, I largely agree with Michelle's points on this. I should argue that a public inquiry is going to be pretty ungratifying for folks because of those same factors about not being able to reveal, you know, full intelligence information, etc. Where I think a better place for this to go, and I hope it goes there, not these hearings, but the larger discussion around this, is measures to prevent it from happening in future elections, be them municipal or provincial or federal, to bolster Canadians' confidence that's being addressed in an effective manner. And really, that conversation has been lost, I think, through this. I think for the Conservatives, talking about this too much is not really to their benefit, as I don't believe it'll be a voting issue at the end of the day. There are better things for them to be talking about ultimately. So I think it will, you know, coming out of these hearings probably fade a bit in terms of the discussion. But I hope it doesn't fade to the point where we don't actually implement some measures here.
Very pretty. Yeah, actually do stuff to stop it. Okay, I'll leave it there. Thanks to our Daily Debrief panel, Corey Tanike, Michelle Cadario, and Kathleen Monk.